The University of Houston, for the first time since Phi Slamma Jamma, is going to the Sweet 16 after beating Ohio State last night. And it's making us wonder this morning, if you look at the accomplishments of Kelvin Sampson, what he's done at U of H, where does he stand among coaches in Houston right now? I feel like A.J. Hinch has to be the top because he obviously has won a championship. And then you look at it, Mike D'Antoni, Bill O'Brien. You have some newer guys in the mix like Dana Holgorsen, who I don't think really count yet for the conversation. But it seems like Sampson might have a case for two at this point.
For two over? Okay, so he'd be over. So we're restricting this to the pro sports plus U of H football and basketball.
It could be any sport.
Okay.
Anything. Yeah.
Well, all right.
People have more suggestions.
College and NFL, right? We're not delving into the high school ranks.
Yes. Yeah. Not high school.
Right. North Shore, shout out.
Rice women's basketball is in the tournament. They had to, or they are in the tournament. I have a hard time. Let's see, Kelvin Sampson, he's going to be below D'Antoni and he's going to be below Hinch, right? Because those guys have just had more deeper runs into the playoffs. You have to adjust for the level of difficulty of doing it at University of Houston. Like Bill O'Brien has the benefit of level of difficulty in terms of like the schedule that they play. And it's not just, every time I say this, people are like, Seth, the AFC South has gotten better. Yeah, I get that. I understand that. They still lucked into these ridiculously easy overall schedules. And especially last year, it wasn't just that it was an easy schedule. It was like that it matched up perfectly in a lot of ways for the Texans. So I would say Kelvin Sampson above Bill O'Brien, given recency of playoff success, in that at least Houston's more recently won a round in the playoffs, won a couple games in the playoffs. They've gone into the final 16.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this.
I'm saying obviously Sweet 16, but I'm trying to think of, I'll go with Kelvin Sampson, then Bill O'Brien.
I think it's got to be this way. One, Hinch. Two, D'Antoni. Three, Kelvin Sampson. Four, Bill O'Brien.
And Dana Holgorsen, and we're just waiting to see what happens.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, Wilbur Cabrera with the Houston Dynamo did get to the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago, despite a Dynamo team that doesn't honestly pay its team a whole lot of money. He's got to be ahead of Bill O'Brien.
He's got to be ahead of O'Brien.
As far as level of difficulty.
He's gotten further. If we're going to, like, we have to put level of difficulty into this.
I got
it. So does D'Antoni doesn't get bucked down at all for level of difficulty.
No.
Because he still has his other same challenges. It's one thing, yeah, you've got James Harden and Chris Paul sometimes.
Am I living in a world in which Wilmer Cabrera is now ranked ahead of Bill O'Brien?
What? He almost got to a championship. He was one round away from a championship against Seattle 2 years ago.
Yeah, the Dynamo just don't spend the way that they maybe should spend.
They barely spend.
Now I'm depressed.
Why does that work that way, by the way? Because it's like a single entity.
Well, now it's
like, they're not even owned, right?
Well, now I think it's changed now based on, I think that the Dynamo do have an owner. I think that's changing a little bit.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, it used to be like it was owned by like Major League Soccer, and they just kind of...
I think they're having some changes with that. I want to make this conversation clear because we got a text at 713-572-4610. This is a ranking of current Houston coaches. So someone's complaining about Rudy T. I'm talking about current Houston coaches. I'm not going back in history. We're just going right now.
Yeah, right now.
Like, obviously, if we were talking historic, Rudy T would have been mentioned by now. Yes, no question. I just want to establish that to make it clear. We're talking about Kelvin Sampson after U of H.
I'm a little shocked that he thought that Rudy T was the first guy that was being disrespected. If you go all the way back, of course, if you're talking championships, I guess he would be the one.
John Kay, the head coach and athletic coordinator of the North Shore Fighting Mustangs, absolutely got to be at the top. Got to be close to the top.
I can't believe you guys are ignoring Bill Yeoman like this. It's BS.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm looking at this. To me, it's pretty clear because Hinch has the championship. D'Antoni's done an excellent job with the Rockets, and he's lost to Greg Popovich and then a dynastic Warriors team.
Well, for the sake of conversation, let's take the championship out of it. Between Hinch and D'Antoni, who would you pick between the two of them?
Oh.
And you have to take the championship out of it, because Hinch deserves credit for the championship.
Right. You're just asking me who I think is better as a coach.
But Hinch also came in as everything was sort of coming together for the Astros. He's done a great job with them, and I'm not taking anything away from him.
Yes.
I'm saying between Hinch and D'Antoni, like, that's a really good, I think, back and forth, because D'Antoni, back in the day with Phoenix, was awesome, and then he had all those bad years with the Lakers and the Knicks. I don't think those were entirely his fault. And here with the Rockets, like, he has changed James Harden. He has turned James Harden into a more efficient offensive scoring machine, where A.J. Hinch has, meanwhile, been managing a lineup where he had lots of options the last couple of seasons was benching guys from time to time to put Marwin in, and he did a really good job too.
So I think it's a really good battle between those two. Look at Hinch and say, all right, because I think naturally a lot of times people are going to say, well, baseball managers, what do they really do anyway? Which is unfair, obviously.
Very unfair.
Like what you mentioned, especially with the way they moved Marwin around. With the way the game is changing now and the way you use relievers especially, managers might be more important now than they've ever been because you've got to be just nails at managing your relievers. But I guess the real question then becomes who benefits more from their GM? Does Hinch benefit more from Luno than D'Antoni does from Daryl Morey? Like in that, that's the tiebreaker for me. Who gets more from their GM and from, I guess, the talent around them? I feel like...
Well, Hinch has probably the more talented team.
Yeah.
Morey got Harden, though.
Morey got Chris Paul.
D'Antoni also got last year's team to play really good defense, which hadn't been the case before.
It hadn't been the case for D'Antoni teams either.
But because he's smart enough to have a defensive coordinator on teams that knows what the hell he's doing and to commit to it, last year's team was the best any team has been versus the Warriors in the playoffs.
Yes.
And they did it because of D'Antoni. I'm going to say it was D'Antoni. I got to put D'Antoni over Hinch at this point.
I actually will as well. And it's nothing against Hinch. I think, though, the 2017 Astros are clearly the best team that I've ever covered here in town in terms of talent and in terms of just overall performance. And this past season, too, with the starting rotation, like they've been phenomenally talented. Where with the Rockets, like they've been talented, but they are facing an uphill battle with Golden State. And yet they were so damn close last season, and they really could have pulled it off if not for Chris Paul's hammy.
I'll give A.J. Hinch credit for doing all those little managerial things.
He deserves a lot of it for
keeping an even keel with the team throughout that 2017 season, managing through Harvey. But if I look at the two things that really set the Rockets and the Astros apart, like in their most recent, most successful seasons, the Astros had that incredible lineup. I think they could have had that same offensive production with a lot of different managers. I don't think the Rockets could have had that incredible offensive production they had last year without Daryl Morey or without Mike D'Antoni. That's what breaks it for me.
I would still go with A.J. Hinch. Let's put a bow on this. Either way, as far as ranking coaches in Houston, you're going to go, let's say, 1-2 in whatever order you want, Hinch, D'Antoni. Would be fair to say that Kelvin Sampson would then be right behind them.
I put Sampson ahead of both of them. If you take away Sampson,
he created this program.
Yeah, if you take away Sampson, UH goes back to being I think in the same dangerous area that they're before. But they'd have a great arena. Yes, they have all sorts of amenities now at UH. But I mean, are you going to replace Sampson with someone of Sampson's ilk? I don't think so. I think you'd have a chance to get an up and comer, but I don't think you get Sampson.
But now you're mixing kind of that college element of, like, in college, it's the head coach and the GM all wrapped up into one.
Yes.
So then it becomes, all right, okay, how much credit are we giving him for building the actual program?
I mean, they lost their best player last year, and they've gone further in the NCAA tournament than they did. And I mean, they don't have anyone that is the scorer that Rob Gray is for this team. Corey Davis is very good, but he's not Rob Gray. So I think Sampson's the number one.
I wouldn't go with him number one just because I don't know what else Hinch can do. I mean, they won 100 games 2 years in a row. They won a World Series. They went to the ALCS. I mean, Sampson, I know that the accomplishment's a big deal. A Sweet 16 is nice, but for Sampson to be on the level of World Series, Western Conference Finals trip, they got to go at least to the Elite Eight. They got to at least beat Kentucky on Friday.
Fair enough, but Mike, they were nothing. They were nothing before.
I feel like
Hinch kind of came in because Luno did create all of this, and at the same time, too, D'Antoni, I mean, he got to work with James Harden, and it was a match made in heaven.
Time now for Mad Takes on a Monday. I don't know how you guys will feel about this, but this is a possible new NFL rule that I really like. The Broncos propose that one time in the fourth quarter only, you are allowed to do an onside kick in a different way. Fourth and 15 from your own 35-yard line. Only the Giants were against this. The rest of the NFL competition committee was for this. Again, to recap, so instead of an onside kick, one time in the fourth quarter, you have an option of a fourth and 15 from your own 35.
We've already seen this in the Alliance of American Football, and I loved it. It was thrilling. I couldn't tell you which teams it was or which players were involved because, come on, let's be serious. But it was fun to watch whenever I did watch it like a month ago. The last time, remember when I fell in love with the Alliance briefly and then fell out of love with it immediately when I was like, oh, I forgot I got Game of Thrones on demand. But I like it. I'm surprised nobody went for this.
Well, no, everybody except for the Giants.
So the Giants were able to shut this down?
I don't know. I'm not sure. They still have to vote this week.
But the early
indications are pretty positive on this one.
Of course, the Giants would vote against it with Eli Manning at quarterback.
Here was John Mara's take. Quote, "What are we, the Arena Football League?" I think that John Mara... Is a 4th and 15 instead of an onside kick really a gimmick? I don't view that as a gimmick.
Well, the onside kick is no longer the same play that it once was, which was a very low percentage play as
it
was.
So
but
hard.
now you don't have a running start for these guys anymore. I mean, I feel like it's a much, much more difficult play to actually successfully pull off now.
John Mara should know better too. Like, this is what football is. It's been the tradition of football is constant evolution and change. Like, from the very beginning. Back from when Pop Warner used to sew pockets into guys' jerseys so they could hide the football underneath them. They had to create a rule to change that. Like, they had to create... The reason you want to talk about... This is what it drives me nuts when football players talk about anything being gimmicky. Have you looked at the football field? What's more gimmicky than damn slashes and hashes and lines all over the place? Like, the whole damn football field's a huge gimmick. Anything to make it more fun and intriguing is good for John Mara. I will not have one of the great franchises in American sport drag the league down with it, with whatever the hell they're doing there with Eli Manning. They're turning Eli Manning into a pariah. Like, there's going to be people, there will be young Giants fans who look back on Eli Manning with disdain.
Good.
Like a 19-year-old Giants fan right now. Let's say a 15-year-old Giants fan.
15.
We're like, what the hell has this guy ever done for me ever since I've been like conscious enough to really pay attention?
Honestly, nothing. His defensive line won him his two titles, but that's neither here nor there, Rich Lord. By the way, I don't want to say anything bad about John Mara because of my future wife, Kate Mara, even though she is married. Kate Mara, what's up? Hey, how you doing? Hey,
she is attractive.
Love you. Love you very much.
I like this.
Bob Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, who we haven't really heard from since he was arrested in a, what should I call it, a brothel? They keep calling it a massage parlor. It was a brothel. There's video of him allegedly getting sex acts done to him, and maybe those will come out, maybe they won't. There's all kinds of intrigue with this stuff, but nobody had really heard from him. He delivered a statement that it said this, as well as other things. Quote, "I am truly sorry. I know I have hurt and disappointed my family, my close friends, my coworkers, our fans, and many others who rightfully hold me to a higher standard. Throughout my life, I've tried to do the right thing. The last thing I would ever want to do is disrespect another human being. I have extraordinary respect for women. My morals and my soul were shaped by my most wonderful woman, the love of my life, who I was blessed to have as my partner for 50 years." Unquote. I don't get any of that. Like, I don't understand any of it. Like, is he looking for sympathy or something? Like, I don't understand any of this statement. It goes on for like four more meandering paragraphs. You got pinched for getting rubbed, and now you got to pay the time, pay whatever comes to you. Like, okay, don't try to glorify. Don't bring up your dead ex-wife in this, I guess is what I would say.
Fair
it's
enough.
Like, are you trying to cloak yourself somehow in the 50 years that you were married?
That's like, what it seems like,
I'm
right?
I'm not even judging him harshly for, like, you know what? Who knows what the hell I'll be doing when I'm 77 years old, especially if I'm a billionaire. I don't begrudge the guy, other than that he made a poor choice and a poor decision in the way he went about it, and he should have known better about what can happen at these places. Whatever. I'm done with you, Bob Kraft. Just now shut up and move off into the distance.
It's unclear what he's apologizing for.
That's true. He didn't really admit anything.
It's an apology, but we don't really know what he's apologizing for.
Yeah.
There is a town in Texas called Dripping Springs, but it might not be Dripping Springs for much longer, thanks to the noble work of Micah Archer and Daniel McCarthy. They're both 31 years old. They grew up in Dripping Springs, and they think it's an injustice that the town was never explicitly named after the founders, Joseph McKeg Pound and his wife, Sarah Pound. So, because of this, they've decided that the town actually should be called Pound Town, which, of course, honors their memory.
Yes.
And, you know, you talk about a town named Dripping Springs, which is a disgusting name with, I think, a double entendre. I don't want to hear about anything dripping. Ew, gross. Like a place like Pound Town, I'd like to go to it 6, 7, maybe even 8 times a week. This is the kind of place that I feel like is wholesome. Now, a lot of people are thinking, oh, you hear the name Poundtown, and you're thinking, oh, double entendres. Absolutely not. And McCarthy and Archer were disgusted when they were asked about the double entendre. In fact, McCarthy declined to comment on whether it was meant to be a double entendre because he was offended by the notion. So I'm a big fan of Dripping Springs changing its name to a much more appropriate name after the good old Pounds who founded Poundtown. Poundtown, a place that I will be going 10 to 15 times a week now.
I like it, and I agree with your take on Dripping Springs. Nobody wants to think of anything dripping. Yes. So it's a weird...
Dripping Springs is it's west of Austin. It's a beautiful place.
Is it?
Yeah.
What do you base this on?
Except for the name.
The pictures I'm looking on the... Yeah.
All right, it's Dripping Springs.
Poundtown, guys.
It's got a waterfall and everything.
Okay. I've never been there, obviously.
That waterfall's not dripping. That's gushing.
Yeah, that's a nice waterfall.
It's like squirting right down the road there. I think that... What do these guys do? They file a motion in town court or something?
Yeah, I would like. I wish I could have sat and didn't watch that one on C-SPAN or something.
What is it? McKeg Pound? Keg-ma-pound?
Joseph McKeg Pound. That's his middle name, I guess. Or maybe he had a double last name. Whatever the case, I'm not sure. All I know is that the Pounds need to be honored with a good old-fashioned Pound Town.
It's beautiful. I do want to go to Dripping Springs and or Pound Town. This is nice up there.
Yeah.